Hi, and welcome to the 30th episode of the Language Marines podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today I have a very special guest. Her name is Shannon Kennedy of the website Eurolanguiste.com. Thank you very much, Shannon, for coming on the show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure discovering you recently through some of the webinars that you've done with Kirsten Cable and Lindsay Dow. You have a lot of great information, a lot of great advice for learning languages.
Thank you so much.
So how would you describe yourself? You're a musician, a language learner, a traveler, a blogger, all of that?
I guess I'm a little bit all over the place. I guess first and foremost, I'm a musician. All of my schooling and everything has been in music. I have a master's degree in musicology, ethnomusicology. I kind of studied languages on and off my entire life, but I really didn't get into it until I started university. And as a musicology major, one of the requirements was to have fluent reading ability in Spanish, German, French, and Italian. And I just kind of latched on to that. And even once I finished university, that desire to continue learning languages stayed with me. So that's really kind of how I got started, I guess. And I, after college, I just kept pursuing language learning. And that's kind of my story, I guess.
Which languages would you say you have acquired little by little?
Oh, that's a tough question because, you know, you kind of pick up languages and then you forget them. And then, you know, I'm a little bit of a dabbler, so I've studied a lot of different languages. But I really have like a core focus. It may not seem like it sometimes, but it's kind of like maybe I'll start a language and realize that's not one of the ones that I want to stick with. So then I'll switch. So I studied Spanish for a few years. And then I also have studied, after Spanish, I studied Arabic. And that one I took a semester of and I didn't keep it up. I really enjoyed it, but at the time I took it, I think the timing just wasn't right on that one. I speak French and English, obviously. And then later I took on Italian and German. I've experimented with Romanian for a minute and dropped that one, as well as Breton because of my, you know, college research. And more recently, I've taken on Chinese, Russian, Korean, and I think that's everything. I don't know. I'm probably forgetting something. Croatian. There we go.
Yeah, I think I read that you have some family ties to the Croatian language.
Yeah, my grandfather.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that interest in family ties with the language. When I picked up French, I knew that in my family, we had distant relatives from Alsace. And when I did start learning some French, I came into contact with the relatives. When I visited France. So having that connection with the language really made the language a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. For me, that's definitely been Croatian, French, and German. I think for me, you know, that they just have a special place in your heart when you have that connection and you feel more attached to them, and that gives you a lot of motivation to really pursue learning them.
And with your traveling, how often do you have a chance to travel to practice the languages that you speak?
It depends. I always joke that I do music because of the traveling. because as a musician, I get to travel quite a bit. And I'm also able to, on occasion, convince my husband to travel outside of what we do for music. And then also because we have family in Europe, we get to go back every so often and visit them. So I get to travel, you know, a couple times a year at the very least, sometimes more than that. It really depends. Every opportunity that I have, I'm out because I really love doing it. It's, you know, it's just, I think experiences like that, you know, they really make, you know, life just that much more enjoyable. You learn so much, you get to see new things, you get to experience new things, and it just, I really enjoy that, so I try and do it as often as I can.
And have you had opportunities to study abroad or live abroad?
Yeah, I did my field work in France. I went to school in the UK. I live in California now. And so I studied ethnomusicology, which is kind of like a hybrid between musicology and anthropology. So in order to write your dissertations and things like that, you actually have to go and do field work, which entails visiting the place that you're studying, interviewing people, and even participating in the things that you're studying. And I was studying Breton music, which is kind of like a folk music in Western France. And so I went to these events called Festnos, which are music and dancing, and they're so much fun. So I did a bunch of events like that, and I even did them while I was living in Ireland because there was a Breton group that happened to be in the same city as me. And so I would attend those events, and then when I'd go back to France, I'd attend them as well. And I do meet with Breton musicians and dancers to interview them as a part of my dissertation and things like that. So I got to go back and forth quite a bit. It's really nice.
And as an ethnomusicologist, what kinds of questions would you ask the musicians for the folk music aspect? What would be of interest?
Well, ethnomusicology covers a lot of different things. So really, you can kind of cover whatever you want to. My particular interest within that vein, it's a multidisciplinary study. So you really get to combine a whole lot of things like history, sociology, anthropology, musicology. And it's just kind of a really nice wide topic. So I think that's probably why I took to it, because I like doing a little bit of everything always. And so for me, it was really about the use of language in music. Breton music is actually in three languages quite often. It's in the Breton language, the Gallo language, and the French language. And so it was really interesting to me to kind of study why each of those languages was, how it was incorporated really, and why they were used and where they were used. And then I also study French popular music. And as far as that goes, you know, you're talking about the use of French and English. So I just found that dynamic really interesting, and that was my focus.
And what was the topic of your dissertation?
I did a couple. One was on the use of the English language in French popular music. It was really more on the voice, but as part of that, there is lyrics and things like that. So I talked about the use of English in non-English speaking cultures, I guess, to make music more accessible around the world, because English is kind of seen as, you know, the dominant language for the music industry. And if you sing in English, you're more likely to be globally successful. Whereas if you only sing in your local language, you're only going to be locally successful. And so that was one of those things. And then, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that with a couple of musicians with their careers. In a pop context, I can see, for example, not necessarily for the French language, but with Spanish, the Colombian singer Shakira, she's very popular in Spanish, but I can definitely see how she's taken on a global reach by being able to sing in English.
Yeah, and for French, it's really interesting because there's a couple different ways. Like, it's not even just in French music, because I hear it in Chinese and Korean music. When I listen to it, you'll have the song in the language of the region. So it'll be in French, it'll be in Korean, it'll be in Chinese, but then there'll be one word or one phrase in the song that's in English. And, you know, wondering why the people who wrote the lyrics to the song decided to do that. I thought that that was interesting. And then you'd have, I mean, even American pop singers, for example. I remember when I was a kid, I had a Toni Braxton single, a cassette. And on one side, it was Unbreak My Heart in English. And on the other side, it was in Spanish. And I've even seen videos of some more recent pop stars, and they'll sing songs in French and Spanish and in English to kind of appeal to audiences in different places. And I always just thought that that was really interesting. And, you know, like you said with Shakira, she sings in different languages, and it kind of is to appeal to different markets, but English she sings to appeal to a broader market. And in French, you know, they're kind of doing the same thing as a lot of artists. Like one that I focus on in particular, her name is Camille. Mm-hmm. And she sings in French, but her most recent album when I did my dissertation was actually in English. So I kind of watched her transition from singing only in French to kind of mixing the two to singing primarily in English. And there's also another kind of interesting thing with French music. There's something called chanter en yaourt, which means to sing in yogurt. It's not actually words. They're just like syllables and sounds, but it's designed to sound like English. Okay. So there's music that exists that has this English sound, but isn't actually real English. And I've my husband is a French musician, and so I'll hear him kind of do something similar. Sometimes when he's recording demos, he'll sing English sounds and some English words, but it's just kind of to fill in and with the melody until he actually writes the words. So it's just really interesting, that dynamic.
Yeah, and as I hear you talk about the musicians, I'm also thinking about how there are a couple of French actors that I can think of. For example, Omar Sy from the movie The Untouchables. He was transitioned into some English speaking movies, and now his career is moving, is broadening. And I can also think of the actress from La Vie en Rose, Marion Cotillard, who was in the Batman movie. So her career is becoming international by being able to speak English.
One of the oldest ones I can think of is even Gerard Depardieu. Mm-hmm. And he was in films in France, like about Rodin. So like really class, like art. But then he was in America, he was in like 101 Dalmatians and the comedic version of The Three Musketeers. So yeah, you definitely have actors who are crossing over because, you know, having that ability to speak English just opens up doors for them and allows them to reach a different level of success because, you know, English is just a larger market than some of the other languages, like French, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does go both ways. I mean, I hate to call some languages lesser spoken or label languages as less popular, but I mean, each language or culture does have its influence and the reach. But yeah, some of those languages, I do see how people can reach a broader global audience if they start adding content in English.
Well, the thing that's kind of different with English is that, you know, it's not necessarily just in English-speaking countries that they're reaching a broader audience, because English is, like, you know, one of the most widely learned languages in the world. So even when you have a country that's not necessarily English-speaking, you can reach that audience through English, whereas you might not be able to reach them through German or French. Not saying that those languages are lesser as far as like value or importance, but when it comes to native speakers or just speakers of the languages, you know, there are certain languages that have more than others, and it's just reality.
Yeah, I think in terms of access, we should clarify not just reaching an audience of native speakers of English, but a global audience of people who use English as a second or third language, or even as a lingua franca, so to speak. If you can add lyrics in English or maybe speak multiple languages as an actor, there are career opportunities that may be broader. And I can see this as a language learner. And in the language learning community, I think a lot of us who are native speakers of English or who speak it very well, I think there are a couple of people who speak it as a foreign language, but who do most of their blogging and their content is in English. And I think we benefit in a certain way that the content and documents and resources are in English or published in English.
Yeah, there's a lot more available in English than in other languages I've found so far. But I mean, there are exceptions. There's really great resources that aren't available in English. Like one of my favorites is Asimil. And while they do have, you know, some of their products available for English speakers, the majority of what they have are for French speakers. And so having that has opened up a lot of possibilities for me as well, you know, just having that one extra. And actually, it's funny you say that as an English speak, native English speaker, we have a bit of an advantage, but sometimes I feel like we have a bit of a disadvantage, because if you take someone whose native language isn't English and then they learn English to an almost native, like a C1, C2 level, I feel like they have a little bit of an advantage because their native language isn't English, but they speak English as well as us. So they kind of have that one extra than us. And, you know, it's just when you live in an English speaking country, every time you start to study a language, people are kind of like, why? Like, what's the point? You speak English. You don't need to learn another language. And you kind of always have this present, and it's, you don't really think about it, but sometimes you're kind of like, oh, that's frustrating. And you almost feel like maybe sometimes it holds you back a bit because you don't have the support system that you need. Whereas if you live in another country, you speak another language, when you go out to learn English, everyone's like, oh man, yeah, you should definitely learn English, because if you learn English, you're gonna have all these doors open for you. You're gonna be able to do this and you're gonna be able to do that. But if you're an English speaker, when you go to learn another language, people don't necessarily provide you that same encouragement. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And going back to what you were saying about people who speak English as a second language and their careers based on that, I think I can think of Kirsten Cable and Chris Broholm or Agnieszka Mordock, for example. I've listened to their YouTube videos and their podcast, and I think these people are more articulate than I am in my native language. I think that ability to adapt to another culture shows a great skill in terms of language learning skills. And I completely agree with what you're saying about, as a native speaker of English, we're kind of in this uphill challenge because we have to justify ourselves. If everyone speaks English, and well, not everybody actually does, but it is almost that you have to justify why you're interested in other cultures or why you want to learn another language. There's a lot of development going on in the language learning community in recent years. There's the internet, the smartphone apps, the language learning communities where people learn together. I think that the image we have as Americans as monolinguals, that we just speak one language, I think that's changing. The most recent generations are definitely embracing a globalized world where we learn about other cultures and we don't just stay at home.
Well, that's definitely one thing that's really nice about how internet has changed things, because it gives people in different areas more visibility. So, you know, you can see that there's plenty of Americans or, you know, people from England or other English-speaking countries who are going out and learning other languages. And so that's really nice to see, because you don't feel so alone. Whereas, you know, before I really got online and, you know, became aware of the language learning community, it was kind of like I was the only person that I knew that was into learning languages like that. And everyone just thought I was so strange. And I just constantly heard, like, why? What's the point? Why are you learning that language? Like, that doesn't make any sense. No one speaks that language. What are you going to do with that language? And you're kind of like, well, but this is just what I enjoy doing. So I don't have to justify myself to anyone else. I just have to have, you know, justify it to myself, like why I'm doing this, so that, because I'm the one investing time in it. So, but it's just, you know, that's one of the really nice things about the online language learning community, is that you can connect with other people outside of your immediate physical community, you know, people who have shared interests with you. So that has been one really great thing about getting to know everyone in the community.
Mm-hmm. And to make those connections, what are some of your favorite platforms or websites for language exchange or getting in touch with other people, teachers, tutors, for example?
As far as online communities, I have two favorites. One is iTalki. I've met quite a few people through iTalki, and all of my tutors are through iTalki, so I really enjoy using that platform. And I also really like HelloTalk. So I like the range of features that it offers. You can do, you know, voice chat or video chat or text chat based on whatever you're comfortable with or however much time you have. And I like that it's flexible in that way. Whereas italki, you know, you kind of have to schedule something and block out time and then get on Skype. And so it that needs to be a little bit, you know, more planned and prepared for. Whereas on HelloTalk, you can just kind of jump on real quick and chat for 5 minutes and then go do whatever you have to do. So,
yeah, I haven't yet tried out HelloTalk, but I've been hearing a lot of good things from other people. Do you have to have a set of contacts on HelloTalk, or can you talk with a random person that you can connect with in a specific language or in order to have access to somebody who's online at the same time as you are?
When you sign up on HelloTalk, you set up your profile, and I think you're allowed to have, like, if you have the free account, you can put one language down, but you can always change it if you feel like practicing something later. And then the paid accounts allow you to list more languages. But once you list your language, they try and find you matches. So you can filter those results by location. So if you're looking for someone close to you to actually maybe meet in person, or you could just filter them by who's available online, even by age and by gender. So if you don't want to, you know, if you prefer to speak to people that are the same gender as you or closer to your age range, you can find people that fit those, you know, kind of criteria. And so it's pretty open. You know, there's just like a tool that shows you who's available to talk, and you can check out their profiles and see what they say about themselves and try and find someone whose interests align with yours.
Yeah, I've been trying out multiple language exchange platforms, and I also have an italki teacher profile. And like you said, I've got many tutors and teachers who help me with different languages, but it's always nice to discover a new app, and especially since many people have talked about HelloTalk. So I think I'm going to try it out.
Yeah, the other thing that's really nice about it, like for me personally, I prefer to do a little bit of preparation before I really start speaking in a language. I like to have enough vocabulary that I don't feel like, you know, I just do a basic introduction and then it's done. So I haven't started studying with a tutor for Korean yet, but HelloTalk, I can jump on real quick and have a quick little chat with a little bit of Korean that I know, and I don't feel as guilty about how little or how much I know. So it's just a lot. It's really comfortable for, you know, whatever level you're at, because there's just, you can do whatever you're comfortable with. You're not kind of like, I have to commit to, you know, an hour long conversation, and then I have to hold up my half hour half in Korean, and I don't feel prepared for that. You know, it's just, HelloTalk gives you, you know, a lot more flexibility than a full-on language exchange, I guess.
Can you tell me a little bit about your study routine for Korean, since that is your most recent language?
Okay. Well, Korean, I'm actually studying with at the same time as Russian and Chinese. So I didn't stop studying either of those two to study Korean. I guess if anything is sacrificed in time, it would be Russian. So Chinese I'm still studying as actively as I was before. Russian, I've kind of gotten a bit distracted with Korean. But my study routine is, initially the first few weeks, Lindsay and I were just kind of wrapping our heads around the language, so getting familiar with it and some of the different rules that you need to know to be able to use the language. So I feel like those first few weeks were pretty grammar intensive. But now moving forward, we're actually kind of focusing more on our particular interests and the resources that we enjoy using for the different, you know, for different languages and things like that. And so for me right now, what I'm focusing on is every morning I listen to a Pimsleur podcast. And I'm finding with Korean, I'm having to listen to them twice before I can move on to the next lesson, because it's just so different from anything that I've learned so far. So for me to get really comfortable with saying the words and stuff like that, I have to do them twice. So that was a first for me, and I felt like I was moving a little bit slow because Pimsleur is pretty slow paced too.
So those are the kinds of conversations in which you say, okay, you sit down next to somebody and you ask them, excuse me, do you speak English? No, I don't understand. Do you understand? What's the weather like?
Excuse me, things like that. So, yeah, but yeah. I spend a lot of time in the car, so those work really well for me, because, you know, I can get in anywhere from 2 to 3 a day, depending on traffic. And you know, I like there's other podcasts that I listen to and that I enjoy, like Talk to Me in Korean and Korean, I think it's Korean Class, not Korean Pod 101. But when you're driving, those just the way that they're set up, you need to give them a little bit more attention than you can really afford them, especially at the beginning stage when you're in your car. And for those, you know, I kind of take notes and you know, they talk about more things than just the little dialogue, and the dialogue doesn't get as much attention as it does in Pimsleur. So for me, I just like Pimsleur better because I can focus on driving and be safe, but I still kind of get some language study in, and I'm making use of that time, which would otherwise be spent listening to something else. So.
So there are some benefits to LA traffic, actually. You can get a lot of listening practice in your commute. I don't particularly miss LA traffic, but actually, Mexico City traffic is definitely a lot worse than LA. But I'll keep that in mind to put more language learning co audio content in the car during my commute.
Yeah, I'm constantly swapping things out on my phone so that I have new content and like the next thing, because for all the audio content I have, my phone doesn't have enough space for everything at once. So I'm constantly having to cycle through things. But yeah, and so I have like a bunch of podcasts as well as the Pimsleur. So if I get bored with Pimsleur, I can always switch, and then I can just review the whatever I listen to later on if I felt like I didn't grasp it enough while I was in the car. I also do Memorize every day. I'm obsessed with Memorize. It's ridiculous. I have a problem. So I use that for Korean as well, and Chinese and Russian. It's really great for building vocabulary, and I have it on my phone, I have it on my computer. It's always with me, and I can also change like how long each of my review and learning sessions are, like how many words I run through. So if I only have a short period of time, I can, it adapts to what my availability is, and I really like that. And I really think that learning vocabulary, especially at the beginning, is really important, because even if you don't really understand the grammar, if you use the words that you need, you know, you're going to get understood roughly. So for me, having a really good vocabulary at the beginning is, you know, kind of the most important thing, and then you can focus on grammar later. So I do that, and then I have a couple of books that I'm working with to learn Korean as well.
Okay, so you would say do a lot of audio listening for conversations, for example, Pimsleur and podcasts, and then build up your vocabulary as much as possible. Use a spaced repetition system like Memrise to review that and also maybe learn more vocabulary. Do you create your own Memrise courses or do you consume a lot of other courses?
At the beginning, I typically go with, you know, frequency word lists. But as I progress in the language, I will create my own. So for Chinese, for example, I took the HSK exam, and a couple weeks before the exam, I found out that I was studying the wrong word lists. So I had, I don't remember how many words it was now, 600 something words that I needed to learn in 2 weeks. So I created my own memorized deck with just those words so that I could really focus on them. I also have another Chinese deck that's private, that's just like words that I've come across that I think would be useful based on what I want, what my goals are with Chinese. And I have those set up for a couple different languages. But I also use, you know, ones that were already created, but I have my own as well. So I kind of use a mix, because the nice thing about ones that are already created is you might learn some words you might not think of on your own. And so it gives you a little bit more diversity in what you're studying, or variation is a better word, I guess.
And for Russian, what are some things that you have done to study that?
Russian, I actually have a tutor on italki. I haven't taken lessons in way too long, which is horrible, but I've been really busy. But I have a tutor that I work with. I have the Asimov Russian course. I also have the Pimsleur Russian course, and I also use Memrise. Lately, what the one thing that I have been doing is I have the Penguin Russian course book. So I do one chapter from that per week, and I like the little reading sections it has at the end of each chapter. I read out loud And that's kind of why I'm so big on listening. Is it's not necessarily because I understand everything that I'm listening to or because that's the best way for me personally to learn, but I think that having a lot of audio input really helps you kind of wrap your head around the way that the language sounds. So when you're working with other sorts of resources like text resources or flashcards or something like that where you don't hear, you kind of have a better idea of how this would sound, so that if you were to read the word out loud or the sentence out loud, you're going to be a lot closer than if you're not working with audio resources because you have an ear for the language because you've had so much input as far as listening goes.
Maybe, I don't know if you relate to this as a musician, but we have to become sensitive to a lot of things in music and respond to the people that you're playing with. So I think, I suspect there's something related in terms of a musical ear that does help you pay attention to things in a language, such as the accent, the intonation. And I can see that, for example, in Chinese for the tones and maybe picking up the different accents or the pacing and phrasing and how people pause. There's a lot of details that we pick up as musicians and that maybe other language learners may not be necessarily paying attention to.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, because when you think about any other language learner or anyone at all, who speaks and understands a language, and we all do because we all have our first language, whatever that might be. The way that we learn it is we spend years just listening before we're even really able to create our first sentence. Like, okay, yeah, so maybe it's a year that we can start saying single words. But if you think about how much time we spend listening, because even in utero, you know, babies start to, their ears start to attune to the language that the mother speaks based on patterns and things like that. So there's, you know, the 9-10 months that you're in the womb, and then the year or two before you actually start really speaking yourself. So all of that time is spent listening, and that's everyone. That's not just musicians, and it's not just language learners. It's anyone who speaks the language, which is basically everyone. And so I think just listening is really important. And, you know, as you said, as a musician, when you think about it too, even if you compare the amount of time you spend listening to music to the amount of time you spend performing music, the listening is a much, much greater, you know, percentage of your time than the actual playing. And I think that says a lot too. There's just something about having that input that allows us to be better performers, whether that's in music or in language or just, you know, in really anything.
I think that's true. Yeah, I think that's a good point that you bring up. Not just musicians, but everybody. I forget where I heard this, but we have two ears and one mouth. So the idea is that we should be spending twice as much time listening than speaking. And I think that also works for social etiquette. But in general, anything that requires some form of input, we should take a lot more time listening, observing, paying attention before we just jump straight in, and how that applies to language learning. I agree that we should do a lot of listening before we start speaking. Do you see yourself using the Benny Lewis speak from day one approach, or do you think you want to take more time to take in more information before you jump in?
I'm an introvert, so my tendency is to take time before I jump in. I've been pushing myself outside my comfort zone because I think that's important more lately, to speak sooner than I would be comfortable with. I wouldn't necessarily say that's from day one, but I guess if speaking by yourself counts, then I am, because Pimsleur, you have to speak your responses. So but initially, you know, like with Italian and German and Spanish and things like that, I spent 99% of my time studying and 1% of my time speaking, and I saw how that didn't work. So even though it might not necessarily be from day one, I do make an effort to speak much, much sooner than I had in the past. So I think it's really important because, again, too, you know, with music, you have muscle memory. And that comes from doing things. And so, you know, as a saxophone player, my fingers know where to go. My hands know how to position themselves. My tongue and my mouth know how to move. My air knows how to, like, I know how to use my air to coordinate all of these different things that have to happen in order for me to play my instruments. And language is the same thing. When you speak a language, you're training your tongue, your throat, your voice, your mouth shape, your lips, you know, where your tongue is against your teeth, how your brain is, you know, working with your body to create these sounds. So every time you speak a language, you're training the muscles to properly form the sounds in that language. And so I think it's really important, you know, it's to get that practice in. Otherwise, if you go from working with, you know, reading and writing resources, and maybe you're just reading along in your head, but if you're never actually using the muscles to create those words, it may be perfectly right in your head, but it's not going to be perfectly right coming out. So you need to be learn to coordinate the two things.
Yeah, I think that's very true. There are other techniques that say along with speaking that writing and taking notes develops muscle memory, and that is more effective than just typing on a keyboard, because we don't necessarily remember the words on a keyboard. Do you apply that as well?
I am a ridiculous by hand note taker. I do not take any of my notes on the computer. It's in one ear, out the other that way. I like to write everything by hand. So I have a notebook like this for every single language. This is my Chinese notebook, and it's falling apart and dying.
Can you put that up to the camera again?
Yeah.
It's so organized. I have to stop talking so that we can see.
This was really early on, so I didn't know a lot of the things. But like more recently, like my yellow is grammar rules and green is vocabulary. And initially, like when I didn't know the characters, I would write out, like here's a good example. I'd write out the pinyin for the one character I didn't know. And then as soon as I started to learn the characters, I stopped writing the transliteration. And but if you look at the beginning, every single thing has the transliteration, the pinyin, and the meaning. So
you definitely put my language learning to shame. So I'll have to be more diligent with my notebook entries. But wow, that's very impressive. So yeah, keep that up. And I have to say that's an important investment in your language learning, because yeah, anything we do digitally, it keeps accumulating, and we forget where we saved something, or what was the name of that file, or where did I save that? Yeah, it would be a lot simpler just in pencil and paper and in one place, and just, yeah, put a date on it.
The other thing I do with my notebooks too is I distill them. So this is my first Chinese notebook, like from the very beginning, and it's nice and thick. So I believe in investing in nice notebooks too that you'll be able to have for a while and that you enjoy writing in. So then once, you know, I've already kind of started with this one, but I have a second Chinese notebook. And so I go back through kind of later on, months later, and I take a look at what I've written in it and anything that I didn't retain and that I still think is important, because there's going to be things that I wrote that I don't think are important anymore. I actually rewrite them into a new notebook. And so this whole book here is actually 3 pages in my new notebook. So it really gets compacted down, because you just, after a while, you know, you retain some of what you've written. You don't need some of what you've written. And so, but it allows you to get that extra practice in on the things that you do think are useful that you couldn't, you know, remember. So it gives you that extra little bit. And then each time, as I keep moving forward, you know, it becomes less and less. And then I'll have new things from the new notebook that go into the third notebook. So.
Is that the technique of distilling from the gold list method?
Yeah. Gold list doesn't work for me. I tried it actually with Russian, and I was even going to write a post on my experience using the gold list method, but I prefer SRS to the gold list method for learning vocabulary. But I do like the distilling process that is kind of associated with that, because especially if it's something that you think is important enough to remember, if you haven't remembered it the first time around, you should give yourself another chance, you know, another go at it.
I've also tried that with audio, because one of the things that with Pinsler that sometimes gets difficult is that if you want to review the material, you kind of have to go through the entire half hour. But I mean, I haven't seen the most recent developments with the Pimsleur method, but I know like you may just want the first conversation and just go through that very quickly. Do you ever edit audio files for your own personal review?
No. With audio, I just kind of take what I get and then move on, because for me with audio, it's more, I think it's more about quantity, you know, as far as input and diversity as well, because when you're really kind of out there in the wild speaking a language, you're not going to get the dialogue exactly the way that dialogue is, you know, in Pimsleur or in whatever resource. Like when I went to China, I had even heard about this before I went to China, so I did as much preparation as I could. There are a gazillion different ways to ask someone where they're from in Chinese. And I thought I was doing pretty good and that I knew quite a few. But when I got there, there were still two or three times where I was just totally stumped on what the person was asking me. And I had to ask them to say it differently. And it turned out they were just asking me where I was from. So I mean, a simple question like that, that after almost a year of Chinese study at the time, I should understand. Like even a more recent example, you know, I can talk to someone for an hour in Chinese without needing to revert to English. But we went to a restaurant the other day and the waitress asked me if I wanted thin or thick noodles. And I had no idea what she was asking me. So it's just, you know, you get caught sometimes and there's really no way to kind of prepare for everything. So really focusing on listening on like one little thing, like if you really feel that you need to spend the time because you think it's something really important, then I would do it. But for me, I think variation and just a ton of hearing different voices, hearing different like female and male speakers, hearing different ways to phrase the same question. You know, just I prefer to have a more diverse range of inputs than focusing really on one as far as listening goes. I don't feel the same way for other types of resources, but for listening, you know, it's kind of like I just prefer to get as much as I can out of understanding it than getting everything. Because in real life, that's really all I need to do. I need to understand just enough to be able to communicate with someone else. I don't need to literally understand every single word that they say.
I think along with communication skills, body language and the tone of the voice is also important. I do see this with students sometimes. It's like a target for archery. And I see that they aim only for like the bullseye in terms of I need to understand all of these words. And I try to tell them, well, you don't just aim for the words, kind of try to get also the intonation of the voice and observing the body language if you have an opportunity to speak face to face. And as you say, yeah, we may get caught not knowing everything after studying for several years. I've been studying Spanish for 20 years and living in Mexico for 7. And yeah, every once in a while, I'll say something stupid like, can you hand me the filter for the spaghetti? No, it's not a filter. It's a colander or a strainer. I mean, coladera in Spanish.
Yeah, I did that the other day. Well, not the other day. I did that like a year ago in French, and I was so embarrassed because you're like, I shouldn't be making these kinds of mistakes, but this happen. And you're just kind of it's funny. You know, later it's really funny, but I think at the time I was about as red as my shirt.
Yeah, I can relate. And with I wanted to ask you about your Chinese with your test. What were your results?
The test, like the way that it works is there's a minimum score you have to reach in order to pass the test. And I was aiming to just get that score. Honestly, when I took the test, I was like, oh my goodness, I'm either going to be like a couple points above or a couple points below. But I ended up being 60 points above what I was aiming for. So it was, I was really happy with that.
And how do they score the test, or what is the rubric?
The scoring is, there are three different sections of the test. So there's a listening portion, a reading portion, and a writing portion. And each of those is worth 100 points. There's for the level I took, there were 15 questions on the writing portion, which were worth 100 points total. So it's kind of weighted. And then the listening portion, I believe, was, oh, I can't remember. I knew this before, but there was each section was worth 100 points, and the questions were different. So each section was worth a different amount of points based on how many questions there were. And so then your total score is added up, and you have to have a minimum score of 180, and I had a score of 240. So
Wow. Well, good job. And is there an equivalency with the Common European Framework?
There's some dispute over that. It's like there's six levels for the HSK exam, so technically it's said, well, they say that it's the equivalent of the European Framework exam, because there's also six levels for that, and so the HSK 4 should technically be a B2. But I guess the test has been recently revised, and so it's supposedly easier than the Common or the European Framework exam. I've done both, and to be honest, I felt like that was one of the things that I was struggling with for the HSK exam, because I go and I'd look online to kind of read about other people's experiences with it, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, it was so easy. And I'm sitting there struggling through the practice test, and I'm like, okay, I know these people have been studying a lot longer than me, and I've only been at this a year, but, you know, why is it, do I feel like it's so much harder for me? So, you know, when I took the framework exam for Italian, German, and French, I felt like it was much easier than the Chinese exam, but I think it's just because I didn't have the same amount of time with Chinese as I did with the other languages, and because it was so different for me than the other languages that I had studied. So, you know, it's supposed to be the same, but arguably it's not. So I don't know, I'll leave that one open.
So you reached about a B1 level in a year of studying Chinese?
Well, supposedly it would be B2. But
oh wow!
It would, I guess, because of the dispute, you could say it's between a B1 and B2.
Okay, so we'll come back to you if I decide to start learning Chinese and get your advice. Maybe I could borrow your notebooks. With your Korean, is there anything transferable from Chinese or the Chinese culture that has an influence on Korean?
When I first started studying Korean, I read somewhere that Korean had a lot of borrowed vocabulary from Chinese. So far, the vocabulary that I've learned, I don't see that necessarily. Like, the two that I've seen are cheers, like gambe, it's similar. And then also America, which is maeguo in Chinese and migu in Korean. So they're kind of similar. But I haven't really come across anything else that's that closely shared. So for me, it just completely left field, but it's kind of why I like it.
And going back to the Asilmil methods, do you see yourself using Chinese to learn Korean or French to learn Korean? Is that beneficial?
Well, the Asilmil, I have them all in French. So I use French to learn Russian, except for the Penguin course book, really. Initially, when I started learning Russian, I made a point of studying Russian through French, and my Russian notebook, 90% of my notes are French to Russian. I just think the comparison is a little bit easier because, you know, you're dealing with gender and you're dealing with some things that are a little bit more comparable between the two languages. Korean, I've learned mostly through English. Chinese, I would say, is 50-50 because I have been working through the Asimil course, and I have a couple of other resources for Chinese that are in French. I think it just gives you a new perspective on the language. And I think, you know, if you do speak other languages, you should look at resources for the other languages that you're learning, because just the approach is different and the way it's discussed is different. I recently read a book as part of the language reading challenge that I'm hosting on my blog that was written 200 years ago, nice. In French, about the Chinese language. And so for me, that was really interesting to have that historical perspective in one language that I know, talking about another that I know. And so I really enjoyed that. And
is that a public resource you can find online?
Yeah, it's actually free on Google Docs.
Cool. I'll make sure to include that in the show notes. That's on Google Books?
No, it's the Scholar. the books
Oh, it's
I guess.
yeah, I like looking at those kinds of resources. They provide a lot of cultural insight that we just don't have today. Sometimes it's interesting to see how other cultures 100 years ago interacted with each other. So yeah, I think we've covered a lot of questions and I've taken up a lot of your time. But thank you very much for your time. It has been a pleasure having a conversation with you.
Well, thank
It's been
you.
a be if people would be interested in getting in contact with you or your website, where should they go?
My website's yarolinguist.com. There's an E at the end of linguist. It's the French spelling. And my email is there. You can get in touch with me. The contact form goes straight to my email box. And you can also get in touch with me on Facebook, which is facebook.com/yarolinguist. And my Twitter handle is yarolinguistsk. So you can get in touch with me there. Yeah.
Great. So I'll make sure to include those links in the show notes and any of the links we were talking about in the show. So we were talking about Asimil, and I definitely recommend those as well. And I used several of those when I was living in France to learn other languages, as you said. So yeah, they're very well developed.
Well, I like Asimov because it's both, quality audio and written, which, most resources are either good audio or a good written resource, not necessarily the two. There's a lot of resources that just bundle whatever audio with the book, so that they can say that they have audio with the book. But Asimov is one that really does the audio accompaniment really well. And, like I said, I like the audio input, and because of the way the Asimov books are structured, you have a variety of ways that you can work with them. I work through the book, and then I work through the book with the audio, and then I just listen to the audio to see how much I've retained. And so for me, Asimov is one of my favorites. They also have a great, if you speak French especially, they have a great series of phrase books for a number of dialects and more obscure languages or harder to find languages. The reason I actually stumbled across them is because they're one of the few publishers that actually had decent resources for Croatian, and that was really hard to find when I started studying that. So, and I, that was my introduction to them, and I've been in love with their products ever since.
Nice,
And their
nice.
games are a huge hit around our house. We have their little memory games, the Asimemoir, and
Oh, I hadn't heard of the games. What are they like?
It's actually a memory game, but the way that the cards are set up, we play Go Fish with them, we play the memory game with them. We also, there's a couple of other things that we've come up with using their cards, and so those are a lot of fun. We like the Asimemoir card.
Oh, you'll have to make a video about that.
Yeah, I do have one
Oh,
actually, yeah.
okay. Well, we'll have to put a link to that as well because I hadn't heard of the card games. You're full of so many tips and advice for I
Hopefully
guess we're gonna have
useful
to.
tips.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I can't get enough of the videos you have on YouTube. They're very useful and very motivational. Well, you've taken a lot of your experience and you have a lot to share with language learners. So I'll definitely recommend that people get in touch with you and visit your website and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. And yeah, you seem to be all on the social media.
Not
So
all. I haven't quite figured out Periscope or Snapchat yet.
yeah, people have been telling me about both, but I have to check them out as well.
I've tried a few times, but I don't know, it's hard for me. The live aspect of it kind of scares me.
Yeah, I can imagine that for introverts. Oh, okay. So people can check out you on a couple, not all, but of many of the social media sites. And if people are interested in taking an English lesson with me or hearing more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website at hugginsinternational.com. That's HUGGINS international.com. Or you can send me an email at hugginsinternational@gmail.com. So thank you very much, Shannon, for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking with you and look
Thank
forward
you.
to if there's any future collaborations.
That'd be great. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Bye.